Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark Pattison. I'm back again with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And I've got another phenomenal guest on this week. You're going to be blown away. We're now recording on April 30th. This pod will come out in a month or so, and so it'll be interesting to see where we are with the whole COVID-19 situation. Hopefully, it has improved by then. Before we get into the pod today, I just want to remind everybody to please go to www.markpattisonnfl and check out what I have going on my blog. And if you want to contribute to Amelia's Everest, all proceeds go to the Epilepsy Foundation. That would be very much appreciated. And as always, you can find a whole bunch of podcasts there. I've now done over 157 of these. And if you could please give me a rating to review, that would be very, very much appreciated. Okay, here we go. On with the podcast. Today, I have the global GM for North Face. Man, I am in good company. His name is Scott Mellon. Scott, how you doing?
I'm great. Thanks, Mark, for having me.
Yeah, well, I felt like it was such a coup when you and I connected on LinkedIn and like, oh my God, I'm going to talk to this guy from North Face. Right before we went live, we were just exchanging some niceties. I live in Sun Valley, Idaho. I'm looking at you right now with this beautiful backdrop, and that's what it is, a backdrop. It's not the actual mountain, but you're running, no. You know, this global brand, $1.9 billion brand from Aspen. Like, how does that work? Tell me how that goes.
You know, it's an interesting role that I have in the company. We basically operate with two business territories. So if you thought about the larger $3 billion North Face brand, it's split into the mountain sports, which I manage, and then into lifestyle, which I have a contemporary that manages that side of the business. So when you see our product show up on Hypebeast or with a Supreme collab, he manages that. When you see it on the back of an athlete on Lhotse or Everest or Meru, I manage that part of the business. And quite honestly, you know, the role is mostly specific to product innovation. And so my focus day to day is to develop products that help our athlete team push the limits of exploration. And those technologies that we develop through our innovation process ultimately find their way into products that end up at Dick's Sporting Goods or REI. So we're pretty calculated, and I'm thankful that I work for a brand that gives me the flexibility to live in a place where I want to live, but importantly, a place that gives us a deep connectivity to the authentic mountain community. You know, when we have the opportunity here to see, you know, a global ski community on an annual basis, to really kind of understand trends and needs, that's pretty powerful for our commercial pipeline. But more importantly, this place has kind of a unique gravity to it. These mountains are largely unexplored. People think of Aspen as kind of a posh fir and champagne place, but we've got 14ers in our backyard with some of the most hairy skiing you'll ever imagine. And so the benefit of that is I'm able to attract our global athlete team here into Aspen to stay in my house, to spend time with my family and I, and we spend a lot of time in the mountains together just talking. And those conversations, you know, they vary from what do you want to do in your life to what's your next, you know, big objective to what are we not making that's servicing, you know, your needs in the Alpine. And so those conversations really lead to a lot of creativity, because typically what we're trying to solve for, Mark, is total white space. And so I'll use FutureLight as an example. This is a textile that we introduced in fall 19 that you know, we thought would really radically change the marketplace. And the reason that came to fruition was because we tapped into an unsolved need for the athlete team. You know, basically, and you're an alpinist, so you can like dive right into this with me. We've essentially gotten used to the products that we use. You've gotten used to your 8,000 meter boots. You've gotten used to your hymn suit. You've gotten used to your pack. That all feels super comfortable. But when you start asking yourself questions around why couldn't it be better, that's where the white space opportunities come in. And so FutureLight was really kind of a simple mission with Andreas Marin, who's one of our 8,000 meter alpinists. He lives down in Ouray, and he was new to the team in early 2017. And he and I went for a ski mountaineering mission up on Mount Sneffels, which is a 14er down in the Ouray region. And, you know, normal alpine day. We're like in and out of our packs, changing clothes as the sun comes up, as the weather comes in, as the wind comes in. Like, you're just kind of in and out of your gear all day. And he said to me at the end of the day, when we got back to his truck, he's like, man, it would have been like an hour faster if we never had to take our shells off. I was like, oh my God, you're totally right. Like, we've gotten so accustomed to like, okay, the sun comes up or we start working hard, take your shell off. And when you're in a harness on a rope, like, it's not the safest thing you can do, but you don't want to wet out. And so this textile came from that one conversation on that one day, alpine climbing and ski mountaineering in Ouray. And it's probably become the most disruptive thing we put in the marketplace in the last 20 years.
So what does that look like in terms of the product?
The end product, Mark, is this incredibly lightweight, highly breathable, totally waterproof textile. But we had to explore completely new methods of make and manufacturing in order to bring it to the marketplace. The existing supply chain couldn't make it. The existing manufacturing and construction techniques couldn't make it. We had to reinvent all of that in order to bring something to the athlete team that's better for them. And now that technology, starting in spring 20, is trickling down to mass market consumers. So anyway, a long-winded way of saying, you know, our process is all about developing authentic product that solves a need for our athletes in the mountains.
Yeah, I want to give a real life example because I live it. I think there's a couple of things I want to unpack. Number one, we talked about, I live in Sun Valley and you live in Aspen, Colorado. And I think one of the things that was a huge game changer for me a couple of years ago is this word called commitment and being fully committed and being fully in. I don't think it's possible. I'm talking to you today from Los Angeles and Seal Beach. I don't think it's possible to know the things I know about the mountains since I've moved to Sun Valley and train at 6,000 feet and understand that the mountains on a much deeper level through the four seasons that come and go, of course, spring to summer and summer to fall and fall into winter, and when the mountains can change on just a flipping dime. And so that's one part of it. The second part is when you're on these rope teams or you're skinning up a mountain, I don't know if people really understand, even though it may look absolutely frigid outside, it could be 10 degrees, it could be close to zero. You can't believe how much people heat up going up a mountain. You know, I mean, you're just down to nothing, but you sweat. And then the amount of effort and work it takes when you sit down and you got to recover because it is zero or 10 and you got to cover up quickly or you're going to be in big trouble. Self-care is everything in terms of your safety on the mountain, especially when you get in treacherous situations.
Yeah, I think, you know, to your point, Mark, the, you know, the reality of experience is so powerful, because you're able to read the weather, you're able to read the snow, you're able to read the rock, you're able to read your teammates. And all of those factors come into your system of dress, because you don't want to get hypothermic. You don't want to get wet at the base layer level. You don't want to get cold, because it's really hard to recover, particularly at the altitudes you're working at. And so it's a constant kind of mind game of reading the mountain, the weather, your team, and the speed that you're moving at in order to, you know, not only achieve your objective, but to come out safely.
Yeah.
And still today, you know, I'm 55 years old and I've spent my life in the mountains, and still today I make mistakes and turn around. Like, I'll make mistakes in what I put in my pack. I'll make mistakes in terms of my hydration or my nutrition, and I'll make mistakes in terms of the way I read the snow or the rock, and I'll turn around. And I think for a lot of people, and probably particularly your larger listening audience, we don't tell that story very often of turning around. Like, but man, it happens more often than the summit. And so, you know, you talk about the word commitment. I talk about the word experience. You know, experience helps us commit deeper.
Yeah.
You know, the older I get, the more comfortable I am in the mountains. I'm not as strong as I was when I was in my 40s, for sure. You know, there's a couple of rare beasts like Neil Beitelman that also lives here in Aspen that just seems miraculously to get stronger every year. But, you know, what I love about the experience side is that there's less anxiety and there's more focus on everything else that's going on in the climb. I just find that a pretty peaceful place to be. We've been kind of lucky during COVID. Slight pivot here on your topic. You know, the mountain towns like Sun Valley also, you know, basically emptied out, and there's nobody in the mountains. And I've spent more time in the mountains in the last 2 months than I probably did all of last year. Because I travel a lot. I'm in mills and I'm in factories and so forth to bring these innovations to fruition. But to be home for 2 straight months just working in the mountains has been a blessing in disguise from COVID, quite honestly.
Yeah, putting a kind of a bow on the last topic you were talking about in terms of, you know, we got into experience and commitment and those other things, and putting yourself in the best position to either make those safe decisions to keep going or turn around. I think when you don't have the right gear, and again, I cannot emphasize, because if you haven't done it, you wouldn't understand it. And that is what it trickles down to the very end of that pyramid when you turn it upside down is energy. It's about conserving energy. And so you can make those types of decisions. And I've been in the mountains where I've had people literally have fallen over and they're like at the death level, where we've had to inject them with certain drugs, you know, to bring them back. And it's not a fun place to see those guys. I've come off mountains where I've been way too spent than what I like to be, but that's also because I didn't have the experience at the time to really understand how to manage my self-care and going up and down. And if you're ripping off jackets and equipment and, you know, your gloves, and then you start to get careless, and that's when all the accidents happen. And that's obviously the key. This next year, you know, I thought it was going to be, actually it should be right now, but as I now get look forward to 2021 and gearing up for Everest, I've kind of made this very lofty goal of taking on Everest and Lhotse Face in within 24 hours. And so, you know, again, everything is going to have to be really compact, and in your energy management is going to have to be an absolute peak, you know, and that's something that I'm really going to have to train for as I, you know, work towards this big ass goal again, you know, this next year as we get closer. So, that mountain has come and gone this year, like all the mountains for the most part, but
everybody, you know, everybody.
Yeah, but we're going to regroup and make it happen. So let me pivot just a little bit and ask you about, it's been a great time for you to innovate, to be in the mountains, to be thinking about how you're going to blast off into the future. But at the end of the day, I know you have a e-commerce platform, but in terms of your storefronts, which are iconic around the globe, Like, how do you manage that right now? How have you guys been dealing with the closures of all the stores? Nobody can go in. Nobody's buying product. It's been hard.
Yeah, it's a really interesting moment that obviously none of us have experienced before in our professional careers. We operate as a brand about 1,200 stores around the world. And the vast majority of those are shuttered right now. E-commerce makes up a percentage of our business, but it's not driving enough gross margin and net income to pay for the entire operation. But we are fortunate to be owned by a much larger entity, VF Corp.
Yep.
VF Corp had, going into this, an extremely strong balance sheet with a very high level of liquidity. And they have pledged, you know, really a people first approach. So even though our stores have been closed around the world for the better part of 6 weeks now, we continue to pay all of our retail associates. Our DCs are operating on a limited scale just to fulfill e-commerce orders, as you noted. But we're paying 100% of our teams around the world at full pay right now, which is really a testament to, you know, 100 plus old company that has great financial management and really great leadership. So I'm proud to be able to work within an organization like this, because fundamentally that same strength of balance sheet and that same strength of you know, financial integrity is what allowed us to set up this whole innovation pipeline. Like, you need pretty significant capital resources to step out of, you know, existing supply chains, to set up new factories, new methods of make. You need pretty extensive capital to be able to do that. And we're fortunate that we work in such an enterprise to be able to do that and continue to do that. Like, I'm sure you saw that we just launched this new Advanced Mountain kit at Outdoor Retailer in January in ISPO. And it won product of the year. It's the first time the North Face has won product of the year from ISPO. You know, that product is actually a system for you, Mark. It's a 21-piece system designed for 8,000-meter climbing. It's sleep systems, it's carry systems, it's apparel systems, it's footwear systems, and it's handwear systems, all integrated into one package.
Wow.
It took me 3 years to do that, but I couldn't have done it without, you know, the depth of the balance sheet of VF, because it's not a big commercial opportunity, but we just created 21 unique technologies that'll flow down into our larger commercial product lines that'll be really powerful long-term for the brand.
Is there any collaboration? When you start talking about VF Corporation, you're talking about companies like Icebreaker, you're talking about companies like Smart Wool. I know there's a bunch of other ones in there.
Yeah.
Is there any collaboration in terms of, I don't know, mind share, product share, in terms of you coming up and creating these different types of products?
You know, we share all of our back end systems as individual brands.
Yep.
And we share the leadership of VF above us. But honestly, we each run our own brands differently and uniquely. And I think that's kind of the beauty of VF, is the brands can chart their own distribution, their own product pipelines, their own product roadmaps. The brands are highly autonomous within the portfolio. So there are some examples of shared technologies, like Thermoball, which is a technology that we launched in 2013. We've actually let our partner brand, or our sister brand Vans, use in snowboard boots and some apparel items. So there are some examples of cross-pollination of technologies, but it isn't really a driving force within the portfolio.
You are in charge of, I think, I'm not telling you what how you run your business, but I think you have a hand in skiing, snowboarding, hiking, mountaineering, and trail running. There might be a couple others. You know, they're all obviously outdoor sports.
Yeah.
Is there one category that you see that's surging at a faster rate than others within that group?
Wow, that's a super good question. When you look at the portfolio of activities that are in the mountain sports territory, hiking is by far the biggest, and it's by far the fastest growing.
Because everybody can do it.
It's super accessible, you know, and it doesn't require a high degree of specificity of product. Second fastest growing is indoor climbing, you know, as a percent to total. And we're really bullish on it. I'm actually disappointed that the Olympic Games got pushed back a year, because we've been developing the uniforms for the US, Japanese, South Korean, and Austrian climbing teams for the Olympics.
Awesome.
So it's kind of fun to do all this work at 8,000 meters. It's fun to do work on a hiking trail, and it's fun to do work in climbing gyms at sea level. Like, you know, we're kind of all over the place when it comes to how we look at this end consumer and their need state in terms of product. I really enjoy the specificity of hiking product. I enjoy the specificity of 8,000 meter product. I love trail running product. Like, it's just a whole different program. And I think that's kind of the beauty of this brand, is it touches so many different things.
Well, that would certainly be exciting for anybody, especially if you have a love for the mountains, but just the variety of what you're able to touch. There was a gentleman, and I'm just spacing on his name right now, but I had on the pod way back. I mean, it's at least 100 episodes ago, but he had started, he's a mountain climber, and he'd started these indoor gyms in Colorado, I think in Denver.
Chris Warner.
Yeah, Christopher Warner. And yeah, he was on the pod. Yeah, good guy, really good guy. And we just had a great chat, and I was just blown away at how the indoor climbing gyms, that's what the right words for those,
that's correct,
exploded on a national level.
Yeah, it's crazy. You know, I think the federations and IFCS did a really good job of organizing the sport. But at the same time, you know, on an Olympic level, Mark, and a World Cup level, they've done a really good job of, you know, kind of creating a halo for the sport. But honestly, you know, the consumer for the majority of gyms is not a competitive climber, nor do they aspire to be a competitive climber, because what climbing represents is a lifestyle and an attitude and an ethos. And you got to go all the way back to like Yosemite in the 60s, Jim Birdwell and Kauk and all those crazy guys, Peter Croft. You know, it was basically the athlete hippie. And there's something rad about that people still deeply resonate with. You know, the dirtbag climber is, you know, there's a synergy there with van life. There's a synergy with aspiration to be on rock. There's a synergy with kind of a counterculture movement that's not about 24-hour fitness. And I also think that there's a physique that comes out of climbing. You know, it's a workout.
Yeah.
Like any workout that people will really admire. Like the climber body, the Alex Honnold body is pretty highly desirable. Hopefully Alex isn't listening to this, because you're thinking I'm a weirdo.
I actually I'm a Freddy Fitness. I have been that way. I've been a gym rat for a long time. It's just in my blood, and it's my passion. I'm very cranky if I don't go out and do a bunch of stuff every day, 7 days a week. But often I say to somebody, you know, if you want to create a body shape like this particular person, like I've got the kind of ideal body that I want to have, you know, just go look at what the people that have those types of bodies, what kind of activities they are doing. And they're usually always activities that are pushing the boundaries and stretching their limits. And, you know, it's not called, you know, a workout, it's called workout. It's not play out. Right. So that's the, I mean, it's just totally some of the separation that I've got a question in terms of, I want to jump really quickly to skiing and snowboarding. So, you know, over the, what you and I are, but roughly around the same age and kind of over the course, you've seen this transition from the skinny skis way back in the days to, they just continue to get wider and wider, wider. And it feels almost like, they have jumped into some of the space of where snowboarding was. Now, I don't know the population of snowboarders versus skiers, but it just feels like more people I'm seeing on the mountains are just skiing in fat boys replacing some of the people that maybe would have gone into to snowboarding, and with the shape skis, making it much easier to get down the mountain.
Yeah, undeniably. If we went back into the timeline, and I'll just give you kind of a brief summation, like snowboarding really started to grow in the late 80s. It came from zero. In the late 80s, you couldn't even use the ski resorts. Like snowboarding was banned.
Yep.
And so it became kind of a counterculture thing. And the bad boys were the snowboarders. And I remember I was working in the ski industry at the time. Like when they let the snowboard brands come to the SIA show, that was like a really big deal in the early 90s. And they partitioned the snowboard brands off into this corner. And everyone was having more fun in that corner than they were in the ski industry side of the trade show. And then you fast forwarded a decade, and snowboarding and skiers in terms of participation were almost 50-50. And then something happened. And I think it was shape skis, and I think it was fat skis, where that participation ratio changed pretty significantly. Today, snowboarding, you know, based on all of our data points, represents about 25% of participation on the mountains, you know, resort access. So it's definitely cooled off significantly. I think at the same time, ski equipment has gotten significantly better in terms of shape skis, fat skis, boots have gotten significantly more comfortable, which was an early allure to snowboarding, which was the comfort of the boots. And frankly, you see that even more distorted in the backcountry. Like splitboarding is maybe, you know, 3-5% of users in the backcountry, because it's just simply a really inefficient way to move around in the mountains. Super rad to come down, but it's super inefficient to get up. And if you think about ski mountaineering, you know, you're spending 90% of your time going up and 10% going down.
That's my favorite part. I'm a little unique that way, but I'd rather go up than go down.
I love the suffer fest of going up.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, all my ski partners here are in their 30s. And so they just completely kick my ass. And I love that, you know?
Yeah.
They just push and push and push.
Yeah. Well, that's the way, you know, if you want to push the boundaries, that's what you have to do. And sometimes, you know, a lot of people, I'm in Sun Valley, you can't go up the main hill. I'm not talking about, you know, in the backcountry, but I'm just talking about going up the main hill there on Baldy. And you have to be down before 9 o'clock, or you can't go up before 4, you know, just to make sure there's no uphill traffic and nobody gets hurt, which is a good rule. And at the end of the day, and I'm walking down there, and it's 4 o'clock, and everybody's coming off the mountain having a beer, and I'm just strapping on and going up the mountain.
Yeah, you're starting your day.
What the hell, right? So in terms of how do you see, I mean, what you've mentioned is you've got a really strong company in VF Corporation with a strong balance sheet. You've talked about positioning and valuing the people at your company, so you're not furloughing or blowing people out, even though you've had all these store closures for the last 6 weeks. As we start to unwind again, April 30th today, in the next coming weeks and months, we're starting to very, very slowly by state open the doors just a little bit. We'll see how things go with sporting events and football as we get into the fall. But as you roll forward, how do you see this playing out for you in terms of bringing your employees back to work and opening up? And are there new rules that you're going to be playing by? Has that been an internal conversation with your retail stores?
Yeah, of course. You know, and it's kind of a complex layered strategy because, you know, stores are dispersed around the world, and you drop from like a federal country level and their mandates down to cantons, to provinces, to counties, or in our case in the US, states and counties. Everyone's got a different policy. And so fortunately, you know, the way that our retail environments or our retail org design is stacked is you have store associates, store managers, district managers, that can manage all of the individuality of specific, you know, specific rules that are being laid down. And those rules are changing all the time. Like, I'm sure you're seeing it in Laguna, but, you know, the way that Pitkin County here in Aspen is flowing out their evolved set of rules around COVID-19 is on a 2-week basis. And so, you know, what flew yesterday may get retracted tomorrow. So we just had the issuance of a face mask mandate in town. Didn't exist for the first 4 months of the county closure, but it exists now for the next month. And so things are like super fluid. And fortunately, we have a pretty stacked or design on the retail side of our business that can manage the individual store's approach to opening and how they service the customers ultimately.
Yeah.
But right now we're not in the position to open any doors. We basically committed to have all of our stores closed now through May 18. We may start to see some loosening of that. That would coincide with a small reopening of our global office in Denver, where we'd let about 5% of the headcount back in, and then there would be a phased approach to allowing headcount back into the office. So that, you know, these are delicate situations and delicate times.
Well,
in the absence of a vaccine.
Like, yeah, well, and hopefully that's around the corner. But I mean, kind of to your point, you have to be flexible as it relates to how it's going, because you just don't know exactly how it's going. And some people have feared going back too soon means a re-spread. I don't know how you say that, but yeah. You know, where we go kind of a whole another phase of this, and we're obviously trying to, you know, end this and move forward in a positive way. So there's some creativity, I'm sure, and some just being open to see how it's going per day, per week, per month, you know, as we go out into the future. I want to ask you about your athletes, guys like Jimmy Chin, and for the life of me, because I've had him on my podcast as well, his partner.
Conrad Anker.
Thank you. Great guy. Amazing person.
Yeah, Conrad's awesome.
Yeah, no, I had built a place outside of Bozeman, and that's where he lives. And so it was a good connection to talk to somebody from the great state of Montana and some of the amazing things that he's done. In terms of the movie Maru, were you guys behind that in any kind of way? Because now you're mixing Jimmy Chin with Conrad. I can't remember the third guy's name, but incredible film. Incredible film.
So I was not in the North Face brand during the Maru event. I was actually working on the North Face as the advertising partner. I ran an advertising agency for several years before I came into the brand. Jimmy Conrad and Renan, who was the third climber, Renan Ostrich, we've all been super close friends for a long time. And I think those guys, you know, we're kind of a dream team of climbers. They're in their prime. They had youth, they had experience, they had tremendous fortitude. Like, it was kind of a dream team for sure. What I respect most about those guys is tenacity. Like, that was Conrad's third attempt on Meru. It was Jimmy's second attempt. And I believe it was Renan's second attempt as well, by memory. Just massive tenacity to get back in there, because the second attempt that they had as a group was brutal. Jimmy almost lost his feet. Conrad almost lost a hand. Like, they just got beat up. Yeah. But they went back and nailed it. And, you know, they shot that entire thing on Canon 5Ds. Like, there was not a film crew there.
Amazing footage. Footage. So were you guys then, you know, fast forwarding the clock just a little bit with your involvement? Did you have anything to do with Free Solo with Jimmy Chin and Alex?
As a brand, yes. Yeah. And we were highly supportive of the effort. Obviously, the outcome of the climb was of critical concern.
Yep.
But we had tremendous confidence in Alex and his capabilities to be able to pull that off. And it's so funny how fast the world moves. Like, nobody's asked me about Free Solo in like 12 months. But I do think it will go down in the annals of sports as one of, if not the greatest physical sporting achievement. Because from a physical point of view, he was so perfectly trained. But from a mental point of view, he was perfect. You know, and he found that moment when his self-confidence overrode everything. And he could just send. Like, to hear him tell the stories is wild. Like, the thing that he was most scared of was not the climbing, not his own physical capability. It was putting his hand into a crack and having a mouse, like, bite his finger. Because there's mites all through the cracks.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. Yeah. You know, I was sitting in a theater called the Magic Lantern in Sun Valley. You know, they charge like $9. It's awesome. And I was in there with a buddy and we're watching this film and we knew the outcome and we're still on pins and needles. You know, he could hardly watch, you know, when he was going to make that leap, you know, where there was the one point when he was kind of a blind leap of faith, so to speak. And he made it and he hadn't accomplished that when he was actually tied into the rock. And even though you knew he was successful and it was working, it was just still like the hair on the back of your neck, you know, going straight up. So,
yeah, you know, Jimmy and Jai built a lot of tension into the edit, which was awesome.
Oh, it was brilliant. It was brilliant. It was, you know, and it's a huge accomplishment. I mean, Jimmy Chin is a very accomplished guy in his own right, just from his climbing standpoint, from his photography, and then to go out and make a couple movies and have that all come together and the success of that film. You know, I mean, obviously losing sucks, which means no box office draw, and winning is fun no matter what sport you're in. And
it's funny. Jimmy and I talked, I think it was last Friday, and we both ended up in the same place. Like, it's been so cool to be home for 2 months, to be with our families, to be in our mountains with our friends, to be skiing every day. Like, we've both been on this hamster wheel.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in Asia making product and he's been making films and doing a lot of speaking appearances. And it's just such a nice moment to be home.
I think everybody's got their tranquil spots with serenity. And I've mentioned this for myself personally, is that even though I'm sitting here down by the beach, and a lot of people would say that's, you know, that's amazing, and it is in its own way. But for me personally, when I'm out in the mountains, I live across the street, as we talked about, from Baldy, you know, the river runs through it, and to going out and having an elk walk down the street, having a moose, you know, poke its head around the corner. The just the trees and the birds chirping, and there's no smog and there's not a lot of traffic. It's just, for me, has been a complete game changer in terms of not being a helicopter. And I do a lot of things. My day is flipping pat between these podcasts and Sports Illustrated and training and everything. And to be able to, like, you know, put that in its place, but getting out in it and looking out the window, and just like, it's just a whole different level for me. And I know it's been really healing for a lot of people around the globe.
Yeah, for sure. I think, you know, in these spaces, life really slows down. And, you know, that's kind of a beautiful thing. I do have to say that my wife's not totally on board with it. She's used to me being gone.
Yeah.
So I'm like wrecking her rhythm.
Yeah. But, yeah. It's all right, man. We don't have to all be helicopters, and it's good to take a time out, right?
Yeah. You know, it's all good. We've done more together in the last 2 months than probably did in the last 2 years. So.
That's awesome. It's reconnecting. Yeah. I'm reconnecting here with my daughters. That's why I'd come out to California and ended up staying here now till June. So
right on.
Yeah, but I'm looking forward to. I've got a trip. I'm going to climb Whitney with Garrett Madison and Jim Mora at the end of May. I'm excited about.
And, oh, cool. Yep.
So I've been up there a couple times, but it will be great to be back in the mountains and
is the park open?
It will be open. I got the permits, but there'll be a lot of snow. So we'll be going up kind of the intense point of that, up to kind of the face in snow versus 99 switchbacks.
Nice. Yeah. So you're going west side, not east side.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
No, we'll be going the east side.
East side.
Up. Yeah. From out of Lone Pine.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Well, listen, I so appreciate you coming on the pod. I know you're a busy guy, taking the time out, visiting with me. I feel like we're connected in some way. I look forward to coming to Aspen. You're always welcome. Welcome at my house in Sun Valley. You know my cat trip as well. So that's another bonus. And you know, everybody, please go out, buy North Face products. They're amazing. They're awesome. And I know that by the time this pod comes out, you guys are back in business and thriving forward.
Mark, it was awesome to connect with you, and thanks for reaching out. And I can't wait for your visit to Aspen.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, buddy. Thank you so much. Take care.
Thank you. Cheers.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, nfl.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.